temperatures 54 degrees, low again around freezing on Saturday night, and a mostly sunny day on Sunday. High temperatures again around 50 degrees. Stay tuned next for It's the Economy. Good evening. Welcome to It's the Economy for this fourth day of January 2018. The first is the economy of the year, a new song, Pink Floyd's Money. Tonight's topic is the ongoing challenges facing the marijuana industry 5 years since Colorado's passage of Amendment 64. We'll get to that topic and today's revocation by Attorney General Jeff Sessions of Obama-era policies aimed at limiting federal enforcement of marijuana laws in states where pot has been legalized after we hear today's economic headlines. A draft proposal to offer offshore blocks to oil and gas drillers in almost all of the U.S. outer continental shelf. The plan opens the door to drilling in the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, making a break with previous administrations who had restricted drilling along the U.S. outer continental shelf. The proposal faces challenges from governors of coastal states and also from an uncertain oil price environment that could keep many drillers from bidding for blocks in uncharted territory. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security is developing soon-to-be-release regulations, which are expected to curb the issuance of H-1B visas and H-1B visa extensions. H-1B visas are U.S. visas issued under the Immigration and Nationality Act, which permit U.S. employers to hire and employ foreign workers in specialty occupations, largely the high-tech industry, military, and engineering. The regulations are part of President Donald Trump's campaign to, quote, buy American and hire American. The government will act to curb foreign workforce entry into the U.S., as well as to frame regulations to prevent H-1B visa extensions during the pendency of green card approvals. The regulations are also expected to change the definition of visa-dependent companies, making it more difficult for businesses to qualify to hire H-1B foreign workers. The proposed regulations are expected to result in the deportation of many H-1B visa holders who are awaiting green card approval in the United States. The regs are also feared to create a shortage of skilled workers in America in core fields like science and technology. And in more news from Washington, the U.S. Justice Department today rescinded a 2013 Obama administration policy that had eased enforcement of federal marijuana laws in states that have legalized the drug, instead giving federal prosecutors wide latitude on pursuing criminal charges against purchasers and users of marijuana. The move causes confusion just days after California and Nevada became the fifth and sixth states to allow the sale and use of recreational marijuana. And here in Colorado, home sales and home prices in Metro Denver again hit record highs in 2017. 57,788 single-family homes and condos were sold across Metro Denver last year, which is a nearly 3% increase from 2016. The average price of a single-family home sold in the Denver metro area last year reached $480,000, which was a nearly 9% increase over the previous year. And the median sales price, the point where half the homes sell for more and half for less, was $410,000, an increase of 7.9%. Inventory shortages are blamed for continuing to drive price gains. As 2017 ended, there were only 3,854 homes for sale in the Denver market, as compared to the average of 13,702 homes that had been available between the years of 1985 and 2016 at the end of December. For It's the Economy, I'm Liz Lane. And good evening and welcome to It's the Economy. 5 years ago, Colorado became the first state to legalize marijuana sales and use for adults. Since then, marijuana has become a key component of Colorado's economy, generating more than $1.3 billion in annual revenue in 2016 and generating $1.29 million in annual tax revenue, as well as employing thousands of workers in the industry. But even as California even as California on January 1st became the sixth state to legalize and regulate marijuana, many challenges exist in and around the industry. Matters of insurance, safety, banking, and agricultural standards remain in flux. And as if all of these issues weren't enough to discuss tonight, today, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced the Department of Justice would rescind a 2013 Obama administration memo known as the Cole Memo, which relaxed federal enforcement of drug laws in states like Colorado, where marijuana had been legalized. My guest to discuss this is Adam Detsky. He is an attorney and an expert on marijuana laws and is at the Boulder Law Firm of Nicastro and Knight. And I welcome you to KGNU. Good evening, Adam.
Good evening and Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you. Thanks so much for working late tonight and joining us live. Well, when you and I were talking about this program last week or so, I don't think we could have predicted that the news cycle would be as magnanimous as it was, providing this pretty major news story for us to unpack at the beginning of our conversation tonight. So if you would, I would love your reaction to today's announcement by Attorney General Sessions, maybe some thoughts on the timing of it, and if you've had a chance to follow some of the response by Colorado lawmakers. Cory Gardner made some pretty bold statements about it today. Love to get your take on this, Adam Detsky.
Well, it certainly came as an unpleasant surprise. Sitting at my desk this morning, I got the notification on text that the announcement was made, and then my phone started ringing off the hook. But it is a big moment, but it's also a yet another confusing moment. It's another instance where the industry and its future becomes very uncertain. Mm. You know, it doesn't change much in some senses. You know, those of us who are in the industry, we weren't sleeping well at night anyway, and this doesn't really change that much.
Is that true? You, even all these years later, even as the revenue is rolling in, there have been few criticisms of at least the regulatory framework that Colorado operates in. We don't catch a lot of news about things going awry. Colorado has certainly been a model for some other states, and every year another state, either through an initiative that gets passed in the state. In other words, we have progress around the country with states following Colorado's lead. So it does surprise me to hear you say that those of you who work closely in the marijuana industry have been somewhat restless.
Well, you know, as long as the product that we're manufacturing and distributing and selling is illegal to have in your pocket at any given time, at any given place, we're always going to have trouble sleeping. And if I may just give a little background about today's announcement, the Cole memo, which was the memo rescinded, came out in 2013, largely in response to things like Colorado passing the amendment. And it didn't actually create this hands-off approach that seems to be reported all over the news today. It seems to be a sort of a spin in the news today that this is a major change in policy. What happened with the Cole memo was the attorney generals in the states, the U.S. attorneys, they didn't know where to prioritize their finances, their limited resources, when it came to enforcement of marijuana laws versus other laws that they had to enforce as well. And so the administration came out with this memo that outlined the so-called priorities of the Department of Justice in terms of marijuana enforcement. Common sense things such as, you know, we don't want it to be trafficked. We don't want it to be in the hands of gangs and previous criminal offenders. We don't want it in the hands of children. And they were very vague topics. So at any given point, anyone in the industry could be charged with not complying with one of these priorities. In fact, the memo actually sort of went out of its way to say, hey, you still have the discretion to charge wherever you feel you need to charge. And part of that is the industry knowing that sometimes it only takes one or two arrests to get everyone's attention. Arrests such as what happened last week with Sweet Leaf, when I don't know how much your viewers would know about the Sweet Leaf case, but what happened was the Denver police went in and arrested many so-called bud tenders and operators of a company called Sweet Leaf, arguing that they were giving away too much product, in a sense. What happened was the law says you're limited to 1 ounce per transaction. And these people were coming in, and they were buying 1 ounce. And then they were leaving. And then they were walking out of the camera's range. And then they would put that in their car or wherever else. And then they'd walk back into the same store at the same address minutes later and purchase another ounce.
Right.
And technically, under the letter of the law, the transaction was a transaction. It was one transaction and then another transaction. But then we have another law that says that you can't possess more than 1 ounce. And the question was whether or not the Denver PD, whether or not they were violating the spirit of the law, knowing that these people possessed more than 1 ounce at the time. It's just an ever-changing world right now, and how anyone comes in and interprets these laws will change all the time. But the point is, with this memo that was rescinded, it didn't rescind any law. It didn't rescind any major aspect of marijuana in the industry. All it really did was attack the fundamentals that our laws were premised upon. Everything we've been doing, everything Congress has been doing, everything our state senate has been doing, everything Met has been doing, it's all meant for the purposes of complying with that memo that was rescinded.
Right.
So now the question is, where do we go from here? And the thing is, it doesn't change much. It just causes us a lot more, we just have to take more Tums.
Well, a lot more anxiety. And you're right, the memo, the Cole memo, which laid out the 8 priorities, and it also, I read it, and it might not have been in this memo, but I read some perhaps follow-up material, which was very clear in directing Colorado and any other state that followed Colorado to implement a comprehensive and very strict regulatory framework around marijuana, not just laws on the books, but laws on the books that were enforced. And, I guess, as an attorney advising your clients, notwithstanding the rescission of this Cole memo today, would you not continue to advise your clients to continue to do the same things that they have been doing all along, to, again, stay within the box of these 8 federal priorities in terms of the conduct of their pot business?
Well, the timing of Jeff Sessions' announcement today and the fact that it became legalized in in California the day before or 2 days before is not coincidental.
Right.
And I watched the news today, and I put it in context with Colorado, and I say to myself, California does not have this system in place that Colorado does. It doesn't have the system in place that Washington does, where there is a mechanism for enforcement, and there is layers of mechanisms for enforcement, where multiple departments have jurisdiction and have the ability to come in and shut a company down if need be. And California doesn't really have that quite in place yet. And they have an issue where they already had a relatively uncontrolled cannabis market in the state before this recreational came. And I think what we saw today was a message very loud and clear from the Department of Justice that if California wants them to assist, and I put assist in asterisks and don't necessarily mean it as a good term, but if California wants them to assist, they will assist. So now, putting that in perspective to your question and with the people in Colorado, and of course, my first legal answer is I would never advise you to violate federal law. But then after that, I'd say that it's important that that you do continue to function in a manner that is, to an extent, over-compliant
right.
with the emerging med laws, because med is what I call the good guys, the Marijuana Enforcement Division. They're actually out to protect the industry as much as to protect the members of the state of Colorado. They are trying to stay ahead of the curve, and they're trying to continue to create laws and using the Still That Coal memo as a guidepost. They're going to continue to do it, because while the memo itself may be rescinded, the principles are still there,
right.
and ultimately that's what they're going to need to follow. And you know, I don't think it changes things substantially more than they already are. You know, especially in the sense that it's not going to be Jeff Sessions leading an army coming in to raid a store. It would be Bob Troyer and his team. And Bob has, as you know, came out certainly later in the day and said, I don't intend to change the manner that I enforce.
Hmm.
This is where the great conundrum of cannabis law comes in, because everything can change day by day. Everything is, every day there's a new issue and a new fire. And tomorrow there could be a new U.S. attorney. And that new U.S. attorney could be like, no, I'm going to enforce everything that Jeff Sessions says, and I'm going to go after marijuana, and I'm going to make a lot of high-profile busts, and I'm going to scare this country straight. You never know
exactly.
What that person
I truly wanted to ask you about that scenario, as that is a possibility now. It's, again, the U.S. attorney for Denver has said that he's not going to change the way he enforces marijuana laws or how he deals with the pot industry in Colorado. But Attorney General Sessions' action today could allow a U.S. attorney in any of the half dozen states that regulate pot, like alcohol, to just literally start going in and shutting down businesses, right?
It's true. But one of the things I can't emphasize enough is, because the Cole memo that was rescinded wasn't law, technically anyone could have done it at any time.
Yeah.
The Cole memo didn't really protect people the way it tends to be portrayed in the media today, kind of making it sound a little bit more than it was. And so ultimately, and this is where I say it doesn't change much, we're still going to lose sleep over this, because every single issue is still up in the air. All this did today was create more smoke and more mirrors and more concerns and just another crisis to put on top of the pile that we all face every single day.
Wow. If you've just joined us, my guest is Adam Detsky. He's an attorney with the Boulder firm of a Knight Nicastro, and he advises and counsels marijuana businesses. We're talking about the challenges that continue to face the Colorado industry even before Attorney General Sessions' announcement this morning. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call, 303-442-4242. Tom Roberts will take your call and cue you up to get on the air. Let's then move away from today's news, Adam, and talk about some of the challenges that the marijuana industry continues to grapple with on a daily basis. You wrote a lengthy and rather comprehensive article on this recently for the Colorado Lawyer. And, you know, you broke it down into sort of categories of problems: the insurance problem, the banking problem, the community pushback problem. So let's walk through some of these. I was interested to read that. And actually, before we get into that, I really was interested in your opening your article, noting this lawsuit that had been brought by some border states of Colorado. I believe it was Nebraska and maybe Oklahoma. They sued Colorado, and I believe it was in economic damages. They said that because of Colorado's passage of Amendment 64 and the legalization of marijuana in the state of Colorado, folks driving out of Colorado into their states, maybe with pot in the car, maybe bringing marijuana into these other states, this was causing an enforcement problem for them and causing them to spend additional funds and resources on traffic patrol. So talk about that case and talk about the result and some of the interpretation as far as federal preemption that you could glean from that decision.
Well, it was a landmark non-decision is what I like to call it, because basically what happened were these states brought a suit against the state of Colorado, and they brought it in the Supreme Court of the United States, which has original jurisdiction over disputes between the states. And they argued that that our state laws, the Amendment 64, was preempted by federal law, and that our violation of those federal laws was causing them enormous expense, and that as a result, drugs were infiltrating their state. And if you read these complaints, marijuana is actually the devil and the worst thing that's ever happened to the states of Nebraska and Oklahoma. What happened was they petitioned the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court actually denied cert. And in the process, they didn't say a thing. There was no decision attached, but what it said to all of us in the legal community is they do not believe that this is a preemption issue. And that's because nobody in the state is really telling these people, hey, you have to go out and buy marijuana. We're not telling them that they have to go out and that they're going to be drug traffickers. Our laws were very narrowly crafted in the state of Colorado to make it very clear that these were laws for the state of Colorado, and that it was the Colorado police who were unable to act on certain crimes and certain, or would not act on certain alleged crimes. The Supreme Court said, we're not going to hear it. And in the process, they shot down this preemption argument. That's not to say future states won't try.
Right.
But that doesn't seem to be the direction. You know, one thing that I can't emphasize with the preemption argument is the industry dodged a bullet. Because if there was cert, then, as again, we would all be sitting here having
waiting for the same exact conversation,
right? And we would all be quite literally shaking in our boots, not knowing what our future was tomorrow. And frankly, the bench right now would be less favorable than it probably was a year ago,
right,
or 2 years ago.
Even with a Colorado on it.
That is correct.
The great irony of that. Mr. Gorsuch was probably going to be a yes vote for the preemption argument. Well, fortunately, that was dodged. Again, just 5 years in, it is so hard to imagine for just those of us who live here and are used to seeing dispensary ads in magazines, and dispensaries is just like another business that we see. And yet, to listen to you and to read your recent article and understand the daily business challenges that marijuana business people face every day, the risks, the sort of, and a lot of these risks are risks that are sort of unprotected risks. You can't put money in the bank. You have security risks. A lot of insurance that's available is kind of not really going to cover true damage and loss. So, and that now, of course, there's the threat of federal preemption and this industry poof going away. Do you have a sense that notwithstanding all the worry and uncertainty, that structurally the marijuana industry is something that really could not be dismantled in the state of Colorado?
I wish I could give a positive answer to that. I just don't know. My take on this whole industry is that as a whole, society wants the medical aspects of marijuana to emerge. I'm not so certain that society wants the recreational aspects to emerge. And I think that as we see more states legalize it recreationally, I think we're going to see this boomerang effect where some states and some people start to essentially rebel. And what they're going to come out and say is, we can still grow marijuana, and we can extract the the components that have medicinal value, like the CBD or the THCA or the various incarnations of CBG and CBN and all these different cannabinoids that we didn't even know existed a decade ago. You know, as we learn to extract those and turn those into formats that aren't as socially shunned as things like smoking, as every cigarette smoker out there would know about, if we can do that and extract the medicinal value, I don't know how secure the actual cannabis plant industry is in terms of recreational, in terms of smoking the stuff that grows on plants. But in a state like Colorado, it has a much better chance of survival, where it's got significant support and it's ingrained in the economy. But for other states, I do see it not going the way of recreational, but rather almost reversing and becoming more of a pharmaceutical and pill issue.
Wow. Yeah, and we'll get to that, the risk or likelihood of big pharma becoming involved in the production of cannabinoid pills and things of that nature shortly. But we do have some people who want to ask questions, so I want to get them on the air. And Karen, I think you are up next. Hi, good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Perfectly. Hi, Karen.
Excellent. Hi. So I wondered what you all think of this new law that Boulder County passed that is suggesting, or it's saying, that people in the county cannot have a greenhouse on their land or they're going to be charged excessive property tax. And also, I was hearing that there is going to be people coming around to inspect people's homes who may be growing in their homes.
I will have to defer to our expert on that. Adam, do you know about that?
Well, I would certainly tell you that there is no law enforcement on the planet who has the ability to go into a home without a warrant and without probable cause and without reasonable belief that you're
violating the law. Right, I would think that and hope that.
Right, and so you know, there are always those vicious rumors going around. With regards to the greenhouses, you know, you're talking about it's kind of blurring a few issues here. You know, greenhouses do take up a lot of water. They take up a lot of power. A lot of towns consider them unsightly. There's a lot of ordinances in a lot of towns that have to do with greenhouses. And from a cannabis perspective, there's certainly no reason why someone would need a greenhouse if they're growing the 3-plant statutory limit that they can have flowering at any given time and the 3 plants that they can have mothering at any given time. Even if everybody in the household had that ability, you know, we're talking at most enough plants that you don't certainly need a greenhouse. From what I understand, it's kind of, again, we're got to see what the challenges are and how the challenges come. And that's part of the problem we have, is sometimes we have people who are the wrong people to challenge the right law. And it comes up creating bad law. But generally speaking, you know, a greenhouse, if it would still get proper zoning if it's compliant with the current laws and it's not about the marijuana. But I haven't heard of anyone really actually applying for a greenhouse. It all kind of came out of nowhere. I haven't heard any single instance where someone has applied to have their own personal greenhouse since this law came about. So I apologize. I can't give you a more specific answer.
Okay, Karen, thanks for the question. And know that nobody can come into your house without a warrant and probable cause.
Thank you for announcing that. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye.
Goodbye. If you've just joined us, it is 6:28. You're listening to It's the Economy on KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host tonight, Liz Lane, and my guest is Boulder attorney Adam Detsky. He advises the cannabis industry and is on this evening to talk about some of the ongoing challenges that the cannabis industry faces, even before today's announcement by Attorney General Jeff Sessions that he would rescind some easing of federal enforcement of federal marijuana laws. If you have a comment or a question, you can call 303-442-4242 and we will get you on the line. Anna, just one other announcement before we go on here with our callers is that tonight from 7 to 8 o'clock here at the 4700 Walnut Street location of KGNU Boulder, there will be a volunteer orientation. And if you have ever wanted to get more involved in producing radio, music, or news programs, or want to see what goes on here a little bit more closely, tonight is the night to do it. Come on down from 7 to 8 o'clock at 4700 Walnut Street in Boulder, or if you're in Denver, at 700 Calumet. Let us go now back to the phones, and we have, I think we have Joe. Hi, Joe. Good evening.
Hi. The last time that Beauregard rattled his sword and the industry was freaking out, one strategy was that recreational could flip to medical. Is that still a viable legal strategy, that if you have inventory, et cetera, and you're being threatened, if you say that you're medical, that you can flip and get legal protection?
Adam?
Last I checked, that didn't pass. I don't think it was pursued. What we're talking about right now is trying to come up with ways that would protect the industry in the event that recreational is shut down. And we don't have that answer yet. In fact, there's a few, more than a few owners that I know of who maintain licenses by literally, a medical license I'm talking about, by literally keeping 20 plants or 100 plants, something so low that they can sustain the 70-30 vertical integration, but they also won't lose their med license, which they're going to turn to rely on in the event that there is something wrong with the recreational. The interesting sure. part about that, the kind of sub little issue with that is right now in many places, that med license is going for relatively little. In fact, I've encountered a few cases where people couldn't give their medical license, grow license away.
Right. I heard in Oregon, I read that recently, they've had all of the pressure from rec causing all of the medical shops to go out of business. And there's all this pressure from recreational, you know, the whole recreational market just flipping from rec, from medical. And so I thought that was interesting. And the dispensary I go to locally, they've been trying to open up recreational, but they haven't been able to do it. And I'm not sure exactly why, but like you said, the original model in Boulder was that you had to have two separate entrances. You couldn't, you know, unless you had a really specific piece of real estate, you had to have this huge investment. And so very few people could do it, you know, set it up so that they had one door that would give you access to rec or medical. And so I hopefully there's enough Republicans who have a vested interest, which, you know, as these guys talked about, our state representatives are vocal, and we'll see what they follow through with. But I know California does as well. And I'm just curious if the amount of capital that's currently generated by this industry is formidable enough to pose a real challenge to just revoke outright, or, you know, is there enough credence in our political will and the money? So I guess the two combined, having voted on this, and Trump said today, or no, rather, I guess it was quoted that he said initially that it's a state thing. So, you know, we're up in the air more than usual, I guess.
Yes. Well, you raised many, many, many issues there. But number one, it's like from a medical versus recreational standpoint, just if you were just an average person who wanted to smoke a little marijuana, you know, they raise the fees of the physicals each year, you know, and in the process, you know, a lot of these doctors are under scrutiny for how they give out that med cards, but they raise the prices. So then you have to file the paperwork with the state, and then you're in those public records. You're in those freely accessible records to a certain extent. If someone needs to get them, they will, in the federal government, you know, regardless of protections. And so why go through that expense? Why go through that paperwork when you can walk into the other side of the same building you're already walking into and get the same exact medication that you're already getting.
Same product.
And same product. And unless you go through a fair amount of the product each month or year, you're probably overall paying less in the taxes for the recreational than you are if you pay for the permit and you pay for the doctor's appointment and you go through the medical side. You know, what we saw today, and you know, I just want to clarify that I don't consider this a political issue anymore. I don't see this, and you know, this is important for any listener who sees this as a Democrat Republican issue. It's not. It's a 70% of the country versus 30% of the country issue.
Right.
And it's many, many red states, many, many blue states have legalized it or decriminalized it or marginalized it. It might be the best word for it. And the number of medical states now outnumber the non-medical states. And, you know, so right now it does come in the context of Republican in the sense that we have a Republican House and a Republican Senate and a Republican executive branch and a Republican judicial branch. It's Republican. And what that means that as long as they have a majority in all these houses and all these branches, then we need Republicans to stand up and say, this is what my constituents want. And fortunately, in Colorado, we seem to have one right now. And that's going to be clutch. We have at least one who's already come out today, matter-of-factly, that said, I'm going to challenge this. And I applaud him for it because, we are a divided country right now. And to say, okay, I am going to go against my president on this issue because I know my people care about it, that's worthy of recognition.
Well, and the recognition of the states' rights aspect of it, which is a Republican idea, right?
Right. And then there's another aspect of the question that had to do with the economy. And as you mentioned, I think the projection today was that the 2017 total between medical and recreational may very well be as high as $6 billion. When you think about the tax revenue that generates, you know, it's interesting. It poses a lot of issues because, you know, on one hand, you know, Donald Trump put this person in office because he felt he was the most qualified. And on the other hand, it kind of goes against what he's saying. But again, it all goes back to the same thing of this is just another day in the life of someone in the marijuana industry. If it's not this stress, it's that stress. If it's not tax bills and it's not pesticides, then it's security of their employees and making sure they have the right cameras in place, or this law is going to be changed, or there's this appointment of this council in Denver that wants to change this law and require this. It's every day. It's nonstop. It's a challenge to keep up with on a moment to moment basis.
Wow, thanks so much for your call, Joe, and your questions. And I'm going to move on to Michael. Thank you.
Thank you.
And
hi,
Adam,
Michael. Are you in the air?
Really appreciate your kind of levied view of the way you're approaching this whole thing. I think one of the biggest issues right now that's facing this industry is its energy consumption. We have 400, whatever it is, the total number now, 300, 400 individual grows in the city of Denver. It's all indoor electric agriculture with lights that are left on 24/7, 1,000-watt bulbs that are high-pressure sodium that have mercury in them that are taken to the dumps. The environmental impact is extraordinary, and it's a story that is really, really understated. And when you were listing, both of you were listing kind of all the issues that you're facing coming up. One of those has got to be relating to the environmental impact of this industry, which has now just moved ahead of concrete and asphalt manufacturing in the amount of carbon production that it produces. 1 kilo of marijuana is the carbon production equivalent of 11 trips coast to coast in an automobile.
Wow.
And so we really, really have to start thinking about how we're going to address this question, because the industry eventually, with the coming pressures of the environmentalists and the conservation groups that are starting to get hip to the extraordinary amounts that are being spent by the industry in the In fact, the number last year was $6 billion just in energy costs alone, that somehow this has to be addressed. Of all the grows in Denver, the average grow in Denver has a $42,000 a month electric bill. I mean, all of us are trying to shut our lights off. We're trying to do better. Progressives are really behind this movement, wanting to have this legalized and being very aware and concerned about the environment, and at the same time, they're supporting a product that's being made that is literally one of the most energy consuming products that we make.
Thanks. That's a great point, Michael.
Michael,
thank you.
Yes. I just want to say, first of all, you're absolutely right. You know, it's there is a conundrum there. It's not it's not dissimilar from New Yorkers wondering why a bunch of environment-loving hippies drive around massive SUVs. Here we are. The industry wants to be portrayed as being great for the environment, helping create jobs, helping every medical issue that has ever existed in the history of mankind. If you listen to them, and in the process, they leave a gigantic footprint, not just in energy, but in waste and in terms of water as well. And in terms of everything that they do, every aspect of it, you're right. They have these high-powered lights that run 24 hours a day. They have hydroponic systems that require the temperature to be just right in this perfect range of 2 degrees in a massive, God knows how many foot warehouse. They have to keep everything at that perfect temperature with that perfect lighting, and there's constant pressure on the industry to come out with a better product and to have the strongest product possible, because now there's so much competition. It's so saturated in terms of the recreational amounts of cannabis that are being manufactured that we actually have instances now where these dispensaries are actually giving up their recreational license because it's cheaper to go out and buy this cannabis from these dispensaries that aren't attached to a dispensary. And those companies are marking down their prices dramatically because they need to move inventory, because otherwise they can't keep up with their electric bill and all the high salaries that they pay for all their growers. And so as they are under more pressure to get that perfect strain and that perfect ingredient, that perfect final product, they're wasting more energy, and they're going to be consuming a lot more energy, and it's a problem, and it's certainly a problem that there's an oversaturation, and it's a problem
right.
That's going to get worse before it gets better, as we see all these other states pop up, and they find out for themselves the mistakes that Colorado's learned, which is if you oversaturate the market, what's going to end up happening is it will collapse, but it won't necessarily collapse in a way that's beneficial for everybody.
You know, all the things that you guys have been talking about on the show have really been about external forces that could come and affect the industry. This is one that the industry itself could keep at bay, could keep at arm's length. They themselves could take control by having a czar, an energy czar, which they do not have, who could look after LED light consumptions versus high pressure sodiums. Why are most of these consultants still suggesting high pressure sodiums when the LEDs are a viable opportunity at a fraction of the cost, so they could increase their profits and at the same time lower their carbon footprint and production? It's in their hands, but it seems like the industry seems to be driven by greed, and that they're trying to grab what they can while they can in order to be able to keep their businesses alive, keep their margins high, because they're concerned about whether they have a future in the world or not. And why invest in all of these environmental-related things, which are really in their control? They're really things that they could self-regulate. What's going to end up happening is the industry is going to be regulated by state authorities. And they don't want that. They shouldn't want that, but they don't seem to pay attention to it. Of all the grows in Denver, let me finish with just one final thought. Of all the grows in Denver, almost none of them are using any kind of alternative energy of any kind, and not even buying it from Xcel. It's wrong. There's nothing about it that's good.
There's a big opportunity there, and Michael, thanks so much for raising that important point. Appreciate it.
You bet. You bet. Thanks.
There is. And Michael, I'll add to that any business is out profit. no matter how you look at it. And if someone comes to them and says, I have a better product that is cheaper and will generate you more profit and be better for the environment, you can trumpet yourself, you can go around, you can have a parade in your honor, you can go to your neighbors, you can say, look at what we've done, and this is why we're such great neighbors, they would do it in a heartbeat. And I'm sure they would. That's all about it. But, you know, you actually bring up a lot of issues, and those issues have sub-issues.
They do.
From one instance, we're now about—
And he didn't even mention all the plastic. All the plastic, which is unrecyclable, apparently, right now. We have a couple more people anxious to get on the line, so I'm going to move to, I'm not sure who this is. Hi, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello. Talking about the announcement today as a threat to the marijuana industry, I kind of equate it, and you can tell me what I'm missing, but to the gay marriage movement, where it just sort of gained bit by bit momentum until it had
critical mass,
yeah, and that it just, and there were those moments where something would come up, somebody would say something or do something, and I'm wondering, isn't that about where the marijuana industry is now, or am I missing something? So I'll listen off the air. Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
You know, it's you know, what we're looking at is a microcosm of everything that's going on in our society right now, especially on these types of social issues. This is very similar, in particularly in the sense that, you know, we're talking about something that was shunned by society for as long as the history goes back. You know, granted, the issues of the gay community go way back further than the cannabis in the United States issue, but people were conditioned over generations and lifetimes to not like these people.
True. And big stereotypes,
like,
absolutely.
And you know, we have made great strides in some places more than others as a society, and then we have other places that lag behind. But, you know, one thing is, history has shown us, is perseverance does pay off, and hopefully it pays off for both communities here, the marijuana industry, and I kind of feel odd saying it because they shouldn't really be in the same sentence, but in the context of the question, you know, the LGBTQT community, everyone needs to evolve, and time will evolve, but you're right. There are certainly parallels, and we have to erase some of these stigmas that are still in society.
And then, Randy, hi. You've been waiting a while. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Let me see. I was listening to the last guy, and I was totally agreeing. Well, you know what? I'm 72 years old. I live at 9,500 feet. I do not have running water or electricity. Hence, no lights. I carried those things back and forth. And with maybe a half a dozen really good girls. Actually, I learned from the volunteers coming over in my front yard like 40 years ago. And I was like, well, I barely got a joint out of them, you know. But then I got pretty good at it after 30 or 40 years.
You're talking about growing your own at your house.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, yes, I cannot do three plants in flower and three plants in grow because I don't have that kind of control over the lighting. Mm-hmm. I'm working with Mother Nature.
Hmm.
Anyway, I think this big business thing is very bad. It follows a certain economic style, like Kmart or, you know, I don't know, big box. Well, anyway, that's really not relevant. Anyway, okay, I think I've babbled on long enough.
Okay, thanks for listening, Randy, and thanks for the call.
You bet.
You know, she does bring up a valid point in that, you know, and it's a concern in the industry right now. I think it's a concern
far broader than people realize, and that is that now that we're 5 years into recreational marijuana, we're starting to see the second generation of license holders, the people who have now cashed out and have sold off. And I think this is a big national concern, is a lot of the people who are buying in, they're not the mom and pop shop anymore. They're the people who see green at the wrong levels, or the levels that don't necessarily help the industry. They're not in it to push and further the legalization movement and make sure that there's this type of medicine out there for people who need it. They're in it because they want to do a quick turnaround and a huge profit. And those people, they don't care about the environment, and they don't care about the laws. They care about the almighty dollar. And it's a concern for the industry. It's a concern for med. It's a reason why you actually saw recent law changes that allowed people from outside the state to have minority ownership, because what was happening was they were trying to find ways to sneak in to ownership and try to have backdoor ways, and they needed some sort of way to regulate it and monitor it. And I think some of the backlash that we're seeing as a society is, hey, wait a minute, these aren't the guys with dreads anymore who wanted to be peace and love. These are businessmen, and they can be ruthless, and that hurts the industry as much as anything else.
So Wired Magazine, actually talking about investment in the marijuana industry and big marijuana, if you will. But Wired Magazine published a piece just a couple hours ago in response to the Attorney General's announcement today. But it was more from an economic angle, more from an investment angle. And their take on it was that the investment dollars that are being poured into not just into the industry as a whole, into creating, large conglomerates, has not waned at all. And the view of investors is, as you say, it's just a green horizon ahead. So talk about that part of it, these little individual interests that have begun to be permitted to allow, for example, people in other states to invest in marijuana endeavors here in Colorado. Are we going to see sort of fun? I mean, I guess the federal illegality prevents sort of hedge funds or other typical investment vehicles from investing in marijuana, or not, or does it not? And to what level do you see marijuana as an asset, a growing asset class that investors want to be a part of?
Well, that's really the interesting. There's so many interesting components about what happened today. From one point of view, it's huge news, and then I can spin it the other way where it's actually not huge news at all. But if there was anyone who was out there shaking in their boots because of this news, it's the insurance companies and the outside investors, people who are big high rollers and want high risk, high yield promise type investments, the ones who are probably celebrating in money baths with their Bitcoin that they bought for $200. These are people who never have viewed this as a long-term investment. They see it as money bags, and they have this glamorized view of what the industry is right now. And of course, those numbers haven't waned because the numbers are only continuing to grow right now. So in Colorado, I haven't seen those numbers, but I'm willing to bet that in Colorado, the number has relatively waned as the number of shops becomes saturated. But then you have all these other states that are coming out. You had God knows how much money just got poured into the state of California. You see this kind of, I'm kind of stumbling for the right way to say it, but you see this interesting mix going on here right now where almost to a certain extent, mom and pop kind of won a little bit today with this announcement, because it's going to scare off these people who wanted the quick buck. Right. And when they come to realize that this market is saturated
and that there are problems that are going to be led down the road, like Michael suggested with the waste, which will certainly capture the attention of authorities sooner than later. They're seeing it, and they're suddenly realizing, hey, today they're probably saying to themselves, maybe this is not the quick dollar investment that I was hoping for. You look at places like Denver that have passed those ordinances last year, I should probably say a year and a half ago because we're 2018, that basically sought to consolidate the number of grows and just general locations where cannabis was being sold, distributed, manufactured in any way, shape, or form. And there is a reason for that. It's all efforts to control who's buying in and who's not. And so, yes, we are seeing more out-of-state investors. The law allows that. But I don't know if that's a good thing. What I do know is it promotes more transparency, and it does keep the majority shares of the company in the state of Colorado. But in terms of the people who aren't getting into the business for their own selfish motivations, which the industry doesn't need if it's going to survive, those people are shaking in their boots today.
Hmm. You know, it does seem that, just as in every business, that a business starts and it grows and develops and expands. And in that movement and in the creativity and innovation that just sort of, you know, happens with businesses and as people get better and their learning curve flattens out a little bit, there is a lot of room for innovation here around the marijuana industry as it exists. Just Michael's point about the environmental hazards, the kind of lighting that's used, the idea of establishing a czar, figuring out what to do with all the plastic. I mean, there certainly does seem to be quite a bit of room for little cottage industries, creative cottage industries, to sprout out around the marijuana industry to actually solve some of these problems, thus creating more business.
Absolutely. There are so many ways right now that so many interesting ideas that a young entrepreneur or not so young entrepreneur could embark on that would aid the industry, have tremendous value, and help the community at the same time, and promote and be good for overall society. The door is wide open, and that's some of the aspects of cannabis laws that get overlooked. You know, they think about it as, oh, I could smoke a joint in public, but there's much more to it than that, and it's a great opportunity for a lot of people, and there's a lot of room for improvement. And hopefully the industry will continue to innovate and will continue to improve. And certainly as these topics emerge, as Michael pointed out, you know, hopefully they will be at the forefront of addressing them. They need to be if they want to continue to survive.
And Adam Teske, you have given us just some great insight into what life is like for people in the marijuana business and the concerns, the ever moving goalposts, and just the pile of crises that you described for us was some really interesting insight. And thanks so much for your responses to all of our listeners' questions. I will link to your article in the Colorado Lawyer on our news.kgnu.org webpage, so people can read your thoughts and your very good article on some of the daily issues that marijuana growers face. And thanks so much for your time tonight. Adam Teske, Boulder lawyer with Knight Nicastro.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Happy New Year, all.
All right. Great to talk to you, Adam. And with that, it is just coming up on 7 o'clock. A quick reminder, if you are around 4700 Walnut Street right now and you are interested in learning more about volunteering at KGNU, there is volunteer training tonight from 7 to 8 o'clock here at the Boulder Station and also in Denver at 700 Calamus Street. Will Two-Step is here, and he'll be taking you down Highway 322 shortly, so stay tuned for that and for KGNU. And it's The Economy. I'm Liz Lane.
everyone. You were just listening to It's the Economy with Liz Lane. Interesting subject, no doubt. We'll see what happens, huh? Shall we? My name is Will Two-Step, and you are tuned to KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. And as I said, you were just listening to It's the Economy. Every Thursday between 6 and 7, you can find that program. But right now, it is 7 o'clock, 7:01, and it's time for Highway 322, where we bring you 1 hour of American folk music. And like I said, my name's Will Two-Step, and I will be your host this evening. Let's see here. Let's just kick it off. We have an hour of music, and let's just do it. Don't forget, stay tuned. At 8 o'clock, we have Ragtime America with Jack Rummel, followed by Swing Shift at 9 through 11. All right, let's kick it off here. We're going to go right back. I've got a nice mix of music, I think, for this this evening. A mix of old, new, and intermediate. We're going to start right off here with something moderately new. Melissa Crabtree, and this comes from her album Biodiesel Van. You all might remember it from, about 10 years ago or so. Or possibly more, even. All right, let's get a look at it. And the tune is called Alternative Fuel. And this is by Melissa Crabtree. The number here, real quick, is 303-442-4242, 1-800-737-3030, DJ@kgnu.org.
Ketchup on the side, I'll bring the methanol and 3.5 grams of lye. And by tomorrow, we'll have alternative fuel. Into the methanol, you should dissolve all the lye. Then take the French fry grease and mix it with your sodium methoxide. And by tomorrow, we'll have alternative fuel. Insects are swarming, wasn't that our warning for global warming too? Oceans are rising, it's not a bit surprising, glaciers are melting through. Inside your blender, the methyl esters will arrive. You can watch the glycerin separate before your very eyes. And by tomorrow, we'll have alternative fuel. Diesel gas. Now take the glycerin, put it in a soap dish, and take a bath, relax. Tomorrow we'll have alternative fuel. And by tomorrow, we'll have alternative fuel. And by tomorrow,